Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
First and goal from the one. James Stewart already has four rushing touchdowns. What will he get here? Here's a handoff. James Stewart running right. Has room. Touchdown. That's five. James Stewart's fifth rushing touchdown, and the Jaguars lead the Eagles 34-7.
Live from TIAA Bank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and John Osher.
That cannot possibly be right. Tony, did you enjoy your three-week vacation?
Yeah, a vacation.
From me?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it was good. It's good to be back.
Is it?
It's been weird.
No one ever says that, John.
Yeah, it has been. It was 2 weeks where you were on the vacay, and then last week they asked me to step in the afternoon. It's been weird not doing a
Yeah, and originally
Jaguars
you were going to take this week off, but I know
I
you
was,
pushed
yeah.
your own vacation back. You figure 3 weeks break is enough for you to,
yeah.
to get through the
Yeah,
next
I wanted
couple.
To break it up, right? Like
right.
5 weeks I might never come back.
Don't let me spoil all my summer by taking all my vacation from Mike at the same time. Johnny O, how are you?
Did he get his shirt yet?
He
did.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
You got a shirt.
It's very nice.
I didn't get him a biscuit, though. I didn't know he was coming in today.
I got you.
You know, let's just put it this way. Tony and I don't talk on the phone every day.
No,
right?
Sound like
so, like, until last Sunday night, I had no idea that he was doing the afternoon show all
that.
Last week.
Sure.
And until he walked in this morning, I had no idea that he was not on vacation.
So he
this
got
week.
A surprise. Hey, Tony.
He
Tony?
Got, yeah. Oh, hey, Tony. This. Right here is for John. I got John a chicken biscuit
this
morning.
We'll split it, Tony. We'll fight to the death.
Well, you know what? One of you guys can have the leftover breakfast burrito
that they
had this morning.
Sounds good.
But you'll know, mine will taste better because I spent my own hard-earned money.
It will
that.
Taste better.
I'm looking forward to spending my son's hard-earned money, Tony. I don't know if you heard. Colin starts his first job today.
No. What's he
yes.
doing?
Yes. What do you think? I'll give you three guesses. What do you think he's doing? You
Man,
probably figure out exactly where he's working
Publix.
If you think of it. That's a really good guess.
Yeah.
That's where I started. Oh, a lot of people bag groceries at Publix, something along those
sure.
lines. That is not it.
Is he working at a comic book store?
He's not. That would be good. But
if he didn't apply at least for one, I'd be disappointed.
That would be good. There's only really one decent one in town, and it's a small little
is
place.
Is he going to be a cart guy for the shores?
There you go. I told you, three
wow.
guesses is what it would
that
take.
Does that get you on free?
I don't know if it gets me on free. Unfortunately, it probably gets him on free.
Right.
And my son does not play golf.
No.
So what are you going to do, John?
That's why they let him on free.
Probably so, right? Oh, yeah, you can play as much sure. as you like, knowing he doesn't like. I don't know if he's going to be a car guy. He's whatever they make him.
Mm.
I dropped him off today at 7:45.
Nice.
At the golf course.
Oh, snap.
Make that money. E.T., what's going on, man?
What's happening?
How was the big football clinic camp thing this weekend with Cliff Averill?
It was great, man. It was great. Over 300 kids showed up for the camp, and I'm not sure what the numbers are on the fun day, but a lot of kids were out there, too. Way
nice.
Too many. Way too
nice
many.
And cool out there this
yeah,
weekend.
Nice and cool.
Yeah, I was dying. I was dying not only because it was so hot on the golf course. I was dying because Ken Brady beat me back to back rounds, which is not going to make me happy. But I'll suffer through it. What'd you do this weekend, Johnny? Anything good?
Just did a little bit around the house. It was darn hot. It was
yeah.
hard to do much outside.
Would have been a good weekend for me to just put my feet up and do nothing, but
yeah, I got the mowing out of the way last Thursday evening.
There you go.
I just got to the point where I can't do it during the day. It's just too much.
Not tough enough.
No, I'm not. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not stupid enough.
There's that. Trust me, because I'm out there on the golf course, and it's not nearly as brutal as mowing your yard.
Yeah.
But I'm still out there with stupid long sleeves on and just dying.
Yeah, we actually grilled out yesterday around 5. And as I came out, I told my wife, I said, it's probably about 5 degrees too hot for that.
Nice. Like we played Marsh Creek yesterday. Ken Brady and I are our sales manager here. Saw an otter.
Sweet.
They've got a few down. I'd seen them down there before.
Yeah.
But this one was coming across the fairway. And they don't run particularly fast. They're the weirdest looking things when they run because
right.
they have that big hump in their back and they're just kind of scooting along. And he was hauling butt to that lake. He knew if I get to that lake, guy in the cart cannot do me harm. I don't know. You know, like it's like the natural instinct. But man, this thing was just chugging and chugging across the fairway.
Everybody loves otters.
It's hard not to,
yeah.
right? I saw an otter. And I saw some rabbits on the golf course this weekend.
Nice.
That makes me happy. You know, not much makes me happy, but that did make me happy. All right, the son is a working man. I hope he brings home a bunch of money for me because I need to continue to pay my greens fees, unlike him. Today, we're going to talk about not strictly Jaguar-related, but it dawned on me that there was something Jaguar-related yesterday. LaDainian Tomlinson turned whatever he turned. I don't know how old he is, but it was his birthday yesterday. And I saw on Twitter somebody basically had put out all the highlights of his career. You know, this many time first team All-Pro, this record, that record, Hall of Famer. And he holds a couple of single-season records, 128 touchdowns, rushing.
Right.
Rushing touchdowns. And in that season, he scored 31 total touchdowns, rushing and receiving combined.
That was sort of back when that was starting to happen a lot, and then it went away because of the running back by committee.
Right. Sean Alexander was a guy that had some big Priest Holmes that had those big seasons. They kind of challenged each other for a brief period. You're right. And there is more of a running back by committee, right, even for the guy. Now, if you have a big season, you're pushing 20 touchdowns in a season. That's a really good year. But I had to look it up. Can you name all the Jaguars who have scored 31 touchdowns in a Jaguar uniform in their career?
I would guess Jimmy, Keenan, Fred, Mojo. That might be it.
Jimmy, Keenan, Fred, Mojo. What's your list, Tony?
Jimmy, Keenan, Fred, Mojo in the fifth. He played here forever. Did Mercedes get to 30?
All right. You get Mercedes. He's in there. Keenan got 30, so he didn't qualify. James Stewart, had like 36, something like that. So
he had like 13 in one game.
Yeah. Jimmy, actually, Mojo at the top of the list. Right. Then I think Jimmy, Fred, or it might be Fred, Jimmy. I don't know. I think it's Fred, Jimmy, if I'm not mistaken. But regardless.
Jimmy had what, like 62? 62.
Yeah, Fred was I want to say a little north of that. I think Mojo scored like 81 in his career, something like that. And then it falls off after Keenan, who had 30, falls off to Allen Robinson at 22
and
career
Mercedes
touchdowns.
Would have been
Mercedes had 33.
Okay,
so he made it. There were five guys. Small number, you know, considering the franchise has been around now for a quarter century that have scored 30 touchdowns. You don't expect it to be 20 players deep, but a little more than five would be nice.
Sure. And when we're talking about a guy today who scored 31 in a year, you know, we're asking for it from a career.
One season.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
You know.
Now, granted, he's a Hall of Fame player, but,
sure,
you know, Fred Taylor was a Hall of Fame, borderline Hall of Famer, however you want to look at him. I mean, and Fred, you know, even if you included those touchdowns from Stacey Mack that he got, Fred would not have challenged that. I think 17 in his rookie year, which was a hell of a year.
Right.
17 touchdowns is a ton of touchdowns.
It's one of the most remarkable overlooked rookie seasons in NFL history.
No doubt.
It is.
Without question.
Got completely overshadowed because Moss had a big year.
So, today, our question of the day, presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We're asking you, not just Jaguar-related specifically, but all sports-related, what are the three sports records that you think are the least likely to ever be broken? There are certainly some that are way out there. I mean, like Cy Young's 511 wins. Will anyone ever get 511 more starts? You'd have to almost wonder the way things go. But certainly 511 wins is as safe as they come.
Yeah, the 300-game winner is going the way of the dodo.
Right. I think we'll still see some.
Some.
You know, who knows how long Verlander will hang on. He looked good yesterday, but you know, I think he's the next closest after Sabathia who's going to retire.
Well,
after
and
this
it's
year.
Even with your aces now, you only occasionally let them go seven. Like it is, like it's just so limited in how long they're allowed to go in game. So, 300.
But
that's
if you
a big
get
number.
If you get a team with a really good bullpen, and you go five or six and hand it over, you probably got a lot higher percentage of times that you're going to convert that
no
W.
No doubt, but 500 isn't going to be touched.
Oh, no, 500 is not going to be touched. So whatever they are, whether they're football-related, if there's a Jaguar connection, that'd be great. You know, I can't think of anything right off the top of my head. So the first one we got on Facebook was someone said 407 single-season batting average. And I thought, are they thinking of Ted Williams, who hit 406 as the last guy to hit 400.
Right, because the actual record's, what, like 430?
424 in the 20th century
right.
and later.
Right.
And prior
Hard
to that.
I think that would ever get touched.
Right. I mean, Cody Bellinger making a run, at least for a while, at 400 this year. Yeah, 424 for Rogers Hornsby, not going to get touched. And four guys hit higher than that in the 1800s, but, you know, they had different rules back then, too.
Right.
They counted walks as hits for a while in the 1800s. Right. So that kind of skews the
it does.
Skews the numbers.
Considering it's not. Those aren't counted anymore.
No. you can weigh in on that if you like or talk any aspect of Jaguar or NFL football with us this morning. You can hit us up on social media at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at John Osier on Twitter, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or, of course, on the phone lines or the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. Jaguars Today kicking off a fresh week over at World Headquarters. Fat Tony is back in the fold. Gang's all here. Johnny O is here. I'm Mike Dempsey along with ET. Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Johnny O. That's right, you heard correctly. Mike Dempsey and Fat Tony in the same room for the first time in nearly a month. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see how long this lasts. Johnny O from Jaguars.com here to mediate if necessary. ET is in the house. As well as we embark on another week of Jaguar-related talk without anything going on in the field, we don't need a whole lot of big stories, Jaguar-related. We don't need fresh new stories if they're not involving Unique Ngakoue getting a lot of money.
But it's lasted a while, you two. You guys have been together, what, 7, 8 years now?
Longer. Well,
really?
I mean, this show, we're going into our sixth season with this show, so we're over 5 years on Jaguars
right,
Today.
Yeah.
Prior to that, we probably did, probably around there, right? Like 3 years, 2 years. I don't know what it was.
Somewhere
Tony.
There, yeah.
It just, it
so
seems like
today to be
it
the
seems like yesterday, John. I could be. I don't know. I mean, look.
At some point.
I think this is our longest absence from each other
okay.
in that period. And Tony may realize, wait a minute. You know, it's like.
The last 3 weeks were awesome.
Why do I keep making the same mistake over and over again? I keep showing up for this gig. Many have. And, you know, I'm just fortunate that I think inertia has kept us together this long. Miles Jack made some comments in a John Reed piece in the Florida Times Union recently that, you know, I think, look, if you're a Jaguar fan and you're concerned at all about the Unique Ngakoue situation, and, you know, some people are going to say, I'm not concerned, he just needs to get paid, whatever. If you're unsure how it's going to play out. Right.
Which right now it's uncertain.
It is absolutely uncertain. And you had, you know, the Talvin Smith situation where it doesn't look like he's going to play maybe ever for the Jaguars. Certainly right. This year it appears that way. You know, Miles Jack is taking things pretty matter-of-factly, it seems. And, you know, for one thing, he seemed very supportive of Unique Ngakoue, understands the circumstances. Like, look, we all watch ESPN. We see the ticker. We see what guys are signing
they're
for.
They're very close. They're among the – I mean – I can't speak to if they're each other's best friend on the team, but they're up there. They're very close. They came in together. And so, yeah, it would be expected that Miles would be very supportive.
Right. And I think most instances you're going to see players be supportive right. of other players getting as much as they possibly can. But Miles basically saying, look, my situation's different. I'm the middle linebacker. I've got to call the defense. There's too much for me to learn. You know, there's always stuff being added. There's just too much on my plate. And that's not to disparage Unique Ngakoue. I read it like, I just can't show up and rush a passer. You know what I mean? I'm not saying it's that simple for Jan, but there's more on Miles Jack's plate. When you talk about last year, Tony, not having great communication at times, he's got to be the starting point of that whole thing. And the irony, too, that you know the concern about his health and his knee coming out of college has proven to be, at least to this point, completely unfounded. Played every single snap for the Jaguars last year.
Well, his knee was always something that they knew would be – he played. The concern was always at some point down the road whenever it would likely be an issue.
Right. It just seems to me that a guy who has yet to miss a game in a Jaguar uniform, knock on wood, didn't miss a play, played 100% of the defensive snaps last year, doesn't seem anywhere close to that issue rearing its ugly head.
And good for him.
Absolutely.
I think the situation with Miles is a little different, too, because Miles has had – he really flashed in 17 in the playoffs and had a good year last year, but probably not as good a year as he would have wanted to, not the impact kind of thing. So I think in his mind, too, I can't really push for a contract yet because I need to still play better and prove to get the contract that I think I deserve. So I don't think he's quite as established.
I would agree with that.
On that front as Unique or Jalen. He's probably third on that front in terms of having played well enough to get what he probably will deserve at some point.
Sure. What are your expectations for him going into 2019? Like, do you expect – 2018 it felt like because it was his first time there in the middle, having to call the defense, get everybody lined, do all those different things that maybe that instinct that we saw him play with in the 2017 playoffs didn't catch up. Does it catch up in 2019?
Yeah, sometimes it's just sort of luck and circumstance too, because what was missing with Miles last year I don't think it was necessarily good, solid play. I thought he was a very good linebacker, did a good job. What was missing after the New York game was the huge impact play that you saw in the playoffs in 2017, where he forced the big interception that Colvin got on a tipped pass against Buffalo. Then he had the interception against Pittsburgh and then the unbelievable play against New England that, even though it wasn't a touchdown, was still an unbelievable play. Well, he just didn't force those turnovers last year. And I still say the big reason why the team in general didn't force as many turnovers was the same reason as a pass rush. You know, the defense didn't play with leads, so you don't get as many opportunities. My guess is if they're playing in the same situations as they were in 2017, then he'll get back to having a few more opportunities to make those plays. But, again, I think some of turnovers created for a linebacker, you've got to be a little bit fortunate too.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. But he does have a nose for the football, it seems.
Absolutely.
When the ball's in the air in his area, he's, you know, as dangerous as any middle linebacker, I think. Let's put it that way.
Right.
In terms of getting his hands on the ball and going the other way.
But to Tony's point, you've got to think that one more year of, you know, if a half step is the difference between interceptions and maybe a quarter step, getting that quarter step back because you're a little more instinctive, because you're more comfortable out there, it can't hurt. It's the whole experience and the game slows down every year thing.
Well, he talked about the fact that, you know, with Telvin out of the lineup, that's 120 tackles that go away. And as he put it, I want to get about 50 of those, right, and have that 150 tackle type season. On the one hand, I feel like, you know, here's a guy
pushing Quincy Williams out of the way.
Right, like,
hey, young kid, right?
Right, go overrun a few plays and let me make that tackle. On the one hand, I think you love the attitude like, hey, you know, we all have to pick up the slack for Telvin Smith. Is there any danger, though, that you read into that, Tony, where Miles Jack is going to try to take on too much? Like, Telvin's gone. I'm the senior guy, even though I'm still a young player in this linebacking core. I've got to make every play out there. Do we run the risk of seeing him be overly aggressive, getting himself out of position because he's trying to make up for, you know, we always talk about a guy getting in the wrong gap because
right. He's
trying to be the guy to make the play. Do we see that happen with Miles Jack if he puts that kind of pressure on himself?
I don't think so. Like, that felt like that comment feels like the right kind of pressure to put on yourself, right? Like, that feels, we know we're missing out on a lot of production with Telvin Smith stepping out of the lineup, and I feel like I'm a good enough player to step in there and replace some of that to make this transition a little bit easier for whoever's going to be playing there on the weak side. And I think that speaks to the, you know, the comfort level of playing middle linebacker for the second year too. I think it will be more instinctive for Miles Jack. Now, what that looks like for him in 2019, because I was expecting a monster season out of Miles last year, and it just didn't happen. He was good, but he wasn't what I think he can be playing any of those linebacker spots. Like, he's just one of these guys, middle, weak, strong. I think he can do it all, and it's just a matter of getting him comfortable where there is more going on in the middle than there is a weak side, and there is a strong. There's just more mentally going on in that spot than there is at the other two spots, and it's getting that to slow down for him, because once that happens, the athleticism is going to take over and he can make plays anywhere.
There's also, I don't think, quite as much tendency or opportunity to overrun plays in the middle as outside. Like, outside, you're really pursuing and trying to get across the ball, the plays, or across the line. Middle, you're at a starting point where you hear about middle linebackers overrunning plays a lot less than weak sides. I don't think he'll get out of control and out of his mind trying to chase down plays and making silly mistakes. I think that would be more likely in the secondary or weak side linebacker than in the middle.
How likely is it in both your minds that Miles Jack ultimately gets a contract extension and stays here in Jacksonville, at least on a second contract?
Given what the linebacker group looks like, I think it's pretty likely.
How much does that factor in to the availability of the franchise tag? Like, do you anticipate if they go into next year, they'll be able to get Miles Jack to agree to, you know, something that the team agrees to as
sure.
well? Because he's going to be an impending free agent unless you have the franchise tag available, and unless you get something worked out with Yannick Ngakoue, I would think it's more likely you're going to use that on a pass rusher, despite the fact that even though you have, as it stands on paper right now, a deeper group of pass rushers than you do linebackers, I think the priority is still keeping the pass rusher.
Yeah, I think it'll happen just because I think Miles wants to be here. So, as I wrote in the Ozone once this weekend, these things are so tricky because each of them is complex, and it's almost like one domino has to fall before you can figure out the next one.
Sure.
But I think it's very likely, especially considering what Tony said, I don't think that – I'd be surprised if Telvin is here long-term. I'd be surprised – at this point, I'd sort of be surprised if he ever plays here again just because of the calf ramification. I don't think he was going to be here after next season anyway because of the calf.
Next – you mean after
well,
the 2019 season?
After 19.
Gotcha.
I think there was a higher percentage chance because the cap number didn't hurt.
There was still some dead money on it.
Yeah, but a lot less.
Yeah, I think you end up saving next year. Let's presume that he was going to play this year,
right?
Because we don't know what's going to happen with it. Does the contract just get pushed forward? It was in a position where I think if you released Telvin next year, you would have saved roughly $7 million, I want to say.
Yeah, so it sort of felt, considering the way he played at the end of last year, that if he didn't have a much bigger year in 19, that it was going to be a decision where they probably let him walk after 19, or let him walk or cut, whatever that is. So considering if you're not allocating money, veteran money, to Telvin Smith at that spot, then you would probably turn around and try to allocate your big dollars at linebacker to just Miles Jack, would feel like.
Yeah, I do agree. You don't want a linebacking core where you've got a brand-new middle linebacker, Quincy mm-hmm. Williams, as a second-year player, not knowing how much he's going to end up playing this year, maybe a lot, you know, and nothing that jumps off the page at you on the strong side either. You know, I do think it's important to try to bring him back if you possibly can.
You want one big-time guy at each level if you can get it.
No doubt.
And that's
Miles. The question is, how much are you willing to pay? How much
sure.
can you afford to pay as well? You know, if Jalen Ramsey – he may think he's getting that contract extension next offseason. I don't know if he is. You know, I just don't know if they
right.
can. They may be able to work it out financially, you know, and cap-wise, but I still think there's a good chance that they have him playing on that fifth-year option and elect to negotiate once the season starts or maybe even after the season under the franchise tag.
Right. Yeah, it is tricky when you've got all three guys sort of in the mix at once.
It's the benefit and the curse of really nailing the top
right.
three picks in an individual draft.
And going after some short-term guys, meaning Calais, Marcel. You know, you've piled some short-term money on top of
I think
that
I think a lot of that short-term money is going to roll off, though. You know,
sure.
Certainly Marcel is
Marcel's
coming out the books.
And then Blake's will be – I mean, there's
yeah.
there is stuff that will be gone – after this year. So
if you want to get in, 641-1010, question of the day, asking you which three records in sports you think are the least likely to ever be broken. You're welcome to weigh in on that as well on the phone lines or the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures. Let's go to Mitt downtown to start things off this week on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Mitt.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
What's up?
How's everybody?
We're great.
Good.
Good. In my opinion, there's a record that will has zero chance of ever being broken.
Okay.
Byron Nelson won in 1945. He won 11 straight PGA Tour tournaments. And he won 18 for the year.
Yes, he did. 11 straight, you're absolutely right, will never be broken unless we see some kind of crazy set of circumstances. I mean, in part, Byron Nelson dominated because that was wartime, and I think there were some able-bodied golfers that had more pressing matters at hand. But you're right about that, Mitt. I don't think anybody – I don't know about – even in today's day and age, I can't imagine – guys don't even play enough to challenge for 18 top 10s, never mind. I mean, the best guy, if you're that good, like when Tiger was at his peak, he was playing just enough to qualify to keep him as a member of the PGA Tour, because then he would selectively play some of these other tournaments. And I think at that time, some of the world golf events might not have counted, but no one's going to win 18 right. in a season. No one's going to win 11 in a row for sure.
It's sort of you get the same feeling about Petty's all-time victory.
What is he, 200?
In NASCAR, because there were so many smaller races back then
right.
that he won against a field that was not anywhere near as deep as it is now. You had like two or three guys who were realistically winning all the
races. Did Jimmy Johnson get to 100? Or was it, am I thinking of Jeff Gordon that got to 100? Are they both at that mark?
I think that's right. But they have both fallen.
Both, I mean, Gordon I know is retired now, but they're so far. They need to have right. another whole career of what right. they've done to challenge right. Richard Petty.
And it's mostly because of eras. It was just a different era, and they approached the sport in a different way that you would never, like you guys said, you would never see a golfer play that number of tournaments, and I don't think you would ever see NASCAR diluted enough to have one person win that many races.
All right, I'm off a little on the Gordon got to 93, Richard Petty 200, and David Pearson had 105.
Right.
So
even right.
No one's gotten halfway other than David Pearson. Not even halfway.
And I guess Gretzky's got a couple of scoring records.
Oh, Gretzky's
in the NHL.
Records are obscene.
It's obscene.
Yeah, it's like Jerry Rice.
The Jerry Rice, you would think. But you could also see the league evolving more and more toward the pass, where Jerry Rice's records, if the game continues to go passing,
right.
you could see somebody touching Rice simply because more opportunities and the game becoming more of a pass and catch.
Right, more pass-centric, and
yeah.
the rules continue to evolve in that direction.
Yeah, so that wouldn't be absurd, especially if they reduce the contact a little more where guys are playing longer at that position, conceivably Rice could be caught. But I can't see Gretzky.
All right, thank you, Mitt. Let's go to Tom in St. Augustine before we hit the bottom of the hour. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Good. 148, 11 years.
Love it.
Cy Young won 511 games.
Yep.
511. Very few guys get to 20 wins a year now.
Oh,
no
yeah.
one. I mean, 300.
Right.
People are debating if anybody will ever get to 300 again.
Yeah, there's no question Cy Young. I mean, really, if you go back 100 years, there's so many pitching records
yep.
that are never going to be touched. 41 wins in a season. Come on. I mean, how many guys get 40 starts? Nobody is going to get 40 starts
no.
in a season. I mean, 511 wins. How about 315 losses? For Cy Young. They're never going to get that. I mean, honestly, how many guys can you count on that will get 300 starts going
right.
forward? Not that many. I think still we'll see some 300-game winners. It's a little bit cyclical. All of a sudden you look up and a couple of guys will be sneaking up on the mark. So I do think you'll see guys with longevity that challenge for 300. But those records, it's almost like they were not playing the same game.
Right, it's almost like we were talking about with golf. I mean,
right.
some of the records were played in such different eras where, yeah, it's almost like you're not playing the same
the
game.
The circumstance, but, I mean, at least with Byron Nelson, you can understand if the field is decimated because guys are battling in World War II, you have a situation where you can take advantage of a weaker field. Cy Young was out there playing against his contemporaries,
right.
and he was still winning so many more games than anybody else. It was absolutely ridiculous. He had just, I guess, an arm.
He had, 826 decisions?
That would be 826. Good math. 826 decisions. How many non-decisions
right.
did he have? He pitched in 906 games. That's not a lot of no decisions. You
no.
think about that, right? 80 no decisions out of 900 games.
But it was all complete games back then.
Oh, of course,
so
right.
Got,
they're all
right.
going crazy
right.
deep in the game, win or lose.
Right.
If your arm doesn't fall off, right. you're going to get the opportunities.
Well, yeah, I was just looking at, like, most innings pitched in a game, right, in Major League Baseball history by one pitcher.
Probably like 18, I'm guessing. Something.
26.
Wow.
Leon Cador and Joe Oeschger, both in the same game, went 26 innings. That's the National League record. The American League record is 24, by the way. That was May 1st of 1920. Those two gentlemen did that. The American League record, Jack Coombs and Joe Harris, both went 24 innings on September 1st, 1906.
All right, we'll take a time out here. That is the question of the day. Which three sports records, doesn't have to be football, do you think are the least likely to ever be broken? You want to talk a little Jaguar football with us as well, 641-1010 on the phone line or the text line, built by Lifetime Enclosures. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Johnny O, and E.T. here with you. Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, we were just talking about on the break, what is the most unbreakable football record? You threw John Paul Krause's 81 career interceptions on the table. It's going to be tough. I mean, there are probably a few that we could go back and look at. I mean, you know, Bruce Smith's sack record is safe for the foreseeable future, although I could see eventually maybe somebody running it down. If Von Miller had the exact same second half of his career as he had in the first half, he would still be four short of Bruce Smith.
Yeah, that one will be tough, but you get the idea that it's not completely unbreakable.
No, it's not complete. I wouldn't put it in unbreakable. I think it's going to be hard to do, though.
Yeah.
You know, you got to
play at a really high level for a long time.
Right, and have health go in your favor as well and a little bit of luck to go along with it.
Yeah, as we talked about during the break, I think Krause's record will be tough because when you watch how he got them and how the old-timers got them, it was often on errant throws down the middle in a league where a team's threw less, but the quarterbacks weren't nearly as accurate as they are now. With all of NFL quarterbacking now being about accuracy and timing and precision and not getting intercepted, it would be just hard for me to see somebody getting 81 when, as we said during the break, both Woodsons fell short of it. I think Darryl Green finished up like 53 or 54. You're talking about some great players who didn't really even get close to it. I think it'd be hard.
It's been like 13 years since someone's had 10 interceptions in a season.
Right.
Imagine stringing 8 of those seasons together. Now you can have a longer career, you know. But how many DBs are Darryl Green that can be running around in their late 30s
right.
at a high level?
It might take the way that Rod Woodson got close, which is playing corner early in the career. And then coming off for like 4 or 5 years and being just an incredible instinct guy and getting him that way. You know, I just think it's gonna be tough to add up to 81 for that figure.
I think we all agree. I mean, any passing or receiving record is in danger. Even Jerry Rice's marks, which right now seem crazily out of reach. You know, we got thinking about this because LaDainian Tomlinson, yesterday his birthday, he scored 31 touchdowns in a single season as the all-time mark. Jerry Rice's all-time touchdown mark, he's got a pretty sizable gap over the rest of the field. Right now, I couldn't see anybody reeling it in. But,
right.
you know, as long as the game continues to progress the way it does, you've got guys like, I don't know, Odell Beckham Jr. They've got to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Guys that start off early. I mean, really, Antonio Brown has an outside chance at challenging some of Jerry Rice's marks. Maybe not the touchdown mark, but just in terms of receptions and yardage.
But then you've
got
to want to play that long. He was playing at 42 or 43, right?
He played at least until he was 40.
Yeah, he played 23 years.
Yeah, I mean, so there is a little bit of that of do you want
to run all those hills for
Yeah, he was so good. Even for a couple of years when he was supposed to be past his prime with the Raiders, he was still putting up numbers. So
yeah. And as like unbelievable as Antonio Brown's career has been to this point, he's halfway there.
Right.
Like he's
And it's hard to imagine him wanting to do it.
Right.
That
can he have a second half of his career? Like, is he gonna play another 8-9 years?
Right.
And can he have a second half of his career that matches what he's done to this point? Because that's what he would need to get to Jerry Rice.
For what he's making, I would play as long as I damn well could. Jerry Rice had 1,200 yards as a 40-year-old.
Yeah.
In 2002.
And can you imagine if he had played the first 4 or 5 years of his career with these rules?
Right.
I mean, because the rules were favored the past at that point, but not nearly as much as they are now.
I mean, even the rules changed it since like the year 2000, you know, in terms of how defensive backs are allowed to get their hands or not get their hands on wide receivers and jam them.
He had 1,200 yards at 40.
1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns at the age of 40.
That's insane.
It really is. At 869 the next year.
Yeah.
So it's not like he was terrible after that. And I remember, because he went to Denver, right? He went to like a Denver training camp or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to recall, like, teams gave up interest in Jerry Rice before he did give up interest in,
right at
in
the
retiring.
End.
You know,
he played with Seattle 1 year.
He was in Seattle, a split year with Seattle and the Oakland Raiders when he was 42 years old.
Yeah, I think Denver at 43. And
he never got into an actual regular season game.
No, they finally just said, look, it's
right.
So, yeah.
But, hey, if anyone could have done it, it probably would have been Jerry Rice.
But squeeze as much out as he could. Give me credit for that.
6-4-1-10-10 if you want to weigh in. Somebody mentioned Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's all-time NBA points record. I think that is absolutely going to be broken, and it's going to be broken in about 4 years or so. I think LeBron James is going to take it down. I might be off on 4 years. I don't think LeBron is ready to hang it up. I mean, I know he's getting up there, but guys can play longer now.
When they've got 3 or 4 more years at the beginning of their career.
Right, and the money that these guys are making, $40 million now a season. And with LeBron, you know, if he wants to take off 20 games, during, you know, selectively throughout the year to kind of stretch out his legs for the postseason.
That's the thing now, sure.
You know, now he's got Anthony Davis. If they build a mini super team in Los Angeles and that, you know, they win a couple of championships in the next 3 years, it might encourage him to stick around a little bit longer. He's not that far off of the numbers from Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who had 38,387 points. LeBron's at 32,543. So he's 6,000 points behind. I mean, a 2,000 point season is a big season in the NBA.
Right.
But over the course of 4 years.
If he plays four, you could say that.
If
sure.
He plays four and plays relatively close to the level he's playing at now. Of course, the guys have the big advantage now, or at least some of them do. You know, even if you're challenging some of the all-time records and you only have to play 1 year of college basketball. Remember, Kareem couldn't even play college basketball as a freshman because they didn't
let
freshmen.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy to think of, you know, the different ways, the rules. But LeBron came right out of high school and started putting up points immediately.
Here's a question for you, and you guys may follow the NBA. I follow it during the playoffs.
Okay. I follow it somewhat.
Will 100 be broken? I think it might be.
I think it could be.
Yeah.
Because what will happen is you'll get a really good score or great score, and it'll be his birthday. They used to let Shaq go crazy on his birthday, right? And Shaq had some of the biggest point games of his career on his birthday. You saw Kobe score, 81, I want to say?
Yeah.
Right? The closest run we've had at Wilt. I think you could see on a night if you've got a guy going for a record who consciously is going to go out there. I mean, look at – they basically, in Oklahoma City, have said, hey, Russell Westbrook, go out there and average a triple-double.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Do whatever you need
to
average a
triple-double. Well, guy James Harden comes out and puts up like 26 in the first quarter.
Right.
Well, then all of a sudden
you've got
to
match
that
for three more quarters.
Well, but for a guy like him, it's not absurd. He's getting fouled all the time. Say he puts up 30 in the first quarter, and then all of a sudden the team says, okay, go after it.
Right, and that's the question, right, too. Like, how much are you going to expend your energy? But if you match up with a really bad team, right, on a particular night, there are enough teams. There are 2 or 3 teams every year that don't have a whole lot of interest in winning because they know they're not competitive.
Right.
You get that team on the right night, on the night when you're in the mood to go for it, and the organization's behind you, I think it could be done.
Yeah,
that
I think it could be
less absurd than it did 5 years ago.
I wouldn't bet on it ever happening
either,
again.
But it could be.
It certainly could. And doing the quick math on the LeBron James chasing down Kareem, it's about 6,000 points. LeBron, at this point in his career, averages 27 points a game. Let's say over the next whatever, he only averages 20, right? It comes down a little bit for him. But say he only averages 20, that would be around 300 games. That would be less than 4 years. Now, how much are they keeping him off the court to manage him
in
that time?
And I think he'll score more than 20 a game.
Likely.
Too. Right.
Even at the end of his career.
So 300 games at 20 points a game will get him home.
We'll get him to that number, yeah.
Right.
And I would expect him to get that.
That would only be resting like 20 games over the next 4 years. But again, anything he scores over 20 will add to that total. The question is, will he stay healthy? You know,
it's the first time he's had a big injury.
Exactly. Yeah. And it may not be the last. You just don't know. I mean, we saw it fall apart for Tiger Woods for a variety of reasons, but injuries certainly caught up to him. And a guy who thought by now Tiger Woods would have 100 wins. Right, I mean, really easy. Maybe 110 or something. He would have absolutely.
And then you thought a year and a half ago he'll never win again.
Never win again. And I think it's a lot closer to that. Honestly, I know he pokes around. I'm not saying he'll never win another tournament. I don't think he's winning enough to run down Jack's major championship record.
I don't either.
I think it's safe for now. And if Tiger doesn't get him, I mean, as good a start as we've seen from Brooks Koepka and some of these guys.
They still got to get 15 more.
Right. I mean, 15 more to break it. Exactly. Yeah. 15 more. Right.
If Brooks won four more over the course of the next couple of years, then the discussion would really heat up to me.
Over the next couple of years,
yeah.
Sure.
Like, if in the next 2 years he's still winning two a year, it's like, okay.
Remember 3 or 4 years ago, though, Jordan Spieth was going to break, and you haven't
heard. And he was actually ahead of Tiger's pace a little bit at that point.
Right, but that was when the pace was, like, based on three.
Yeah.
Right.
I know.
Yeah, I mean, Spieth was a really good player, but and he's not the physical marvel that Tiger or Koepka were or is at this point in time. You know, he was a guy that relied on that dead-eye putter.
Next on Jaguars Today.
That can come and go. Hey, you never know. We are talking about sports records, football and otherwise. The most unbreakable ones you think in sports. You can hit us up on social media with your trio of records if you'd like to weigh in there. At MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, and at John Osier on Twitter. On the Jaguars Today Facebook page, we'll check in on the text line as well. Built by Lifetime Enclosures, same number as the phone line at 641-1010. Coming up in a moment, we've got this date in football and the Roland Reich roll around the National Football League. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Johnny O, and ET on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, June 24th throughout the years. Tony, let's go back to 1922. The American Professional Football Association changed its name on that date. What did they change their name to?
The AAFL.
No, the National Football League. Thank you very much. The NFL, the APFA, now known as the NFL, or it has been at least for the last 97 years. Same day the Chicago Staleys changed their name to the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Famous birthdays for the state. I'll give you a couple. Michael Cheever, who knows what he could have been had he been able to stay healthy for the Jacksonville Jaguars, second-round pick by the Jags in 1996, ended up playing only 17 games in two injury-shortened seasons. Michael Cheever is 46 years old today.
I heard Leon last week say that he was one of the top five linemen that he ever played
with. Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Leon took himself out of the equation.
Yeah. Cheever was the big lost story of the 90s for that team.
He 46 years young today, and who knows, maybe he would have been Brad Meester before Brad Meester.
Yeah.
You know?
Or he's in real estate in Atlanta, I believe. So
good for him. Yeah. Hope he's doing well. You know, Bradley Chubb, born in the state in 1996. He's 23 years old. John and I were talking about him last week, Tony, in reference to Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'll ask you this. Chubb was the fifth pick overall in last year's draft by Denver. Had the luxury of having Von Miller attract attention, draw attention away, but ended up with 12 sacks as a rookie. If, for whatever reason, Yannick Ngakoue did not play football this year, and I'm not suggesting that he won't, but if he didn't, if he retired, if he got hurt in training camp, whatever, what sack total would you project for Josh Allen as a full-time starting defensive end for the Jaguars?
I would expect 8. As a full-time starting defensive end, and I think if he got anywhere near that 12 mark, that you'd be doing backflips.
Yeah, I think I would expect about 10 out of him. In that circumstance, having Calais Campbell and the other guys on this defensive line, now this is presuming that the offense is going to take a step forward, that, John, like you mentioned earlier, they're playing more like they did in 2017 with some leads to protect in the fourth quarter when you can really pin your ears back, so to speak.
It's just such a huge thing in terms of those numbers. You know, because if you get a couple at the end of games, it takes you from 7 to 10. You know, I mean, it's just such a big deal to be playing with leads and to get 3 or 4 opportunities right in a row. I watched Freeney and Mathis for years. That's when they got the majority of their stuff.
Oh, absolutely. That's you come down to the fourth quarter, you get desperate, you're dropping back every single time. So, let's hope that Josh Allen doesn't have to learn what it's like to play this year without Yannick Ngakoue. But,
let's hope,
let's hope for some leads.
Let's hope for some leads. And C, go make a run at 8 or 10 in your role anyway, and we'll be good with that. Bradley Chubb, 23 years old today with 12 sacks as a rookie last year, and that was this date in football history.
Now, let's roll around the NFL with Roland Reich Plumbing, where quality and experience count.
New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees has been awarded $6 million in a diamond fraud lawsuit. Brees was sold precious gems for $15 million by Vahid Maradi, and they were apparently way overpriced. Which
Listen, hold on. Drew Brees dropped $15 million on some bling.
Yeah.
Boy, him and me both.
Right?
Which the jeweler denied it was overpriced, and then they eventually wound up in court where Brees has been awarded $6 million, so I assume it was actually worth $9 million. Like, how does that work?
I don't know, but here's what I would suggest to Drew Brees. Do not leave two naked ladies in your bed when you leave for work, because you might not have those diamonds when you return. The Le'Veon Bell story?
Oh, yeah,
had $1 million of jewelry stolen because he said, I can't tell you what they're wearing. She was naked, and she was naked, too. And when I left, that's the situation.
I came back, and my closet was empty.
Oh, of course it was.
I needed clothes, Tony.
NFL Network is reporting that New England Patriots running back Sony Michel is running at, quote, full tilt and should be a go for the start of training camp after a knee scope that kept him out of the Patriots' entire offseason program. And Washington quarterback Alex Smith told Fox 5 in D.C. that he wants to play football again. In an interview on Friday, Smith joined Angie Goff on her Oh My Goff podcast that was published on Friday afternoon. He said, quote, there are steps I've got to conquer before I get there, talking about playing again. He says, learning to run again, that's a big one. I'm already throwing. Throwing isn't a problem, but dropping back, moving around, change of direction, as he had that leg really blow up. So we'll see if Alex Smith ever plays football again. I would doubt it would be in Washington with them drafting Dwayne Haskins, but we'll see.
Hey, good luck to him, man. I mean, it's not my life, not my leg. You know, he's made a lot of money. If he never gets to play again, fine. I know a lot of people say, man, come on, just give it up. That was a devastating injury. But, again, it's his. If he wants to spend the next year rehabbing and he can get back, maybe it's just to prove to himself that he can get back out there.
Right.
Maybe never be a long-term starter again, but just to not have his career go out that way.
Well, it probably can't hurt in terms of the usability of the leg going forward to get it as good as he can. You know, it's a motivation.
Right, in terms of rehabbing it as best possible, and then you just hope that he doesn't have some kind of injury to it again. You think back.
It's a brutal sport.
And they make so much more money these days, right, the quarterbacks do. And Alex Smith, the former number one overall pick, you think back to when Joe Theismann had his leg broken, as I recall, and this is off the top of my head, correct me if I'm wrong, that he had an insurance policy for a significant amount of money, but had he returned to play, if it was not a career-ending injury, if he had played one more snap, that policy would have gone poof.
Yeah, he tried to come back the following offseason. He tried to come back in the following training camp. I think he tried to come back and finally saw that it just wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
If memory serves. I'm a big Redskins
that's
fan
me too. It was a while back, so, and I wasn't expecting to be talking about this, so I didn't look it up. But
I'm almost sure he tried to come back because I was a huge Skins fan at the time, and that was in the time where information was hard to get.
You may be right, and it may be but a case that he would have prioritized returning to play over that, but I'm pretty sure that were the details of the policy that if he had played again,
he was
set to collect on a career-ending injury.
And that may have been what it was. Hey, if I can come back and play, and then when you try it, it's like, look, I'm not going to be able to play well enough to make this worthwhile.
Right.
So,
and I don't know what the – I'll have to look it up, see what the total amount of money was. But it just seemed at the time like that was more of a factor in his decision. Like now if you had a – let's say you had a $2 million insurance policy, well, what does that mean to Alex Smith? You know, if he could come back and collect
– Right,
he'd
come back
he'd make more
million.
Than that
sure.
to come back and play as a backup somewhere, you know, or whatever the number would happen to be. It might be a
– Skins had Jay Schrader, baby. They moved on.
They did.
And he was really good the year after Theismann got
hurt. And that is something interesting, I think, about Joe Gibbs when you look back over his tenure as one of the great coaches in our lifetime, that he won those three Super Bowls with different quarterbacks.
He won three Super Bowls with Theismann, Ripien, and Williams, and got to the NFC Championship game with Schrader.
Well, there you go. Why didn't he win it? Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, the Giants, Joe.
The Giants were really good that year.
Yeah. That's pretty impressive, though. Yeah. You know, you think about it. I mean, because I get it. The 49ers kind of had – You know, and that was two different coaches. Seifert came in at the end,
right,
and won the last one with Montana.
He had two Hall of Fame quarterbacks.
Exactly. And,
you
had
know,
two
Gibbs
guys.
Never had anything close to that.
Right. He had guys that were really good for periods of time. I mean, Doug Williams was a really good quarterback. Joe Theismann was a good quarterback. Mm-hmm. He wasn't league best, but he wasn't in the bottom half of the league.
Right. He was MVP in 83. When they were really, really good,
they had an unstoppable offense.
Yeah, but he
then.
Was not an overall.
That's
elite
the year they
guy
went 14-2. I
yep.
think right,
yep.
14-2. Tony and I have talked about this before because it the game pops up at, I don't know if it still is the highest. I guess it's not because the Rams Chiefs broke the record. Mm-hmm.
But 48-47
right, the Packers, yep. Right? And they lost two regular season games, each of them by a single point. I think they lost to Dallas.
Lost to Dallas in the opener, 31-30.
And I would have had that score too. I don't know. For some reason, I just remember that season, and then they got pretty much blown out in the Super Bowl by the Marcus Allen Raiders that year. So it's kind of weird the way that – I mean, that they were one of the most dominant single-season offenses you'd ever seen.
At the time, they were the highest-scoring offense in NFL history.
They felt they had an air of invincibility, even with the two losses.
The incredible stat on that team, they forced 61 turnovers.
Jeez.
Holy cow.
That is, and especially in an era where it was modern day.
Right.
I mean, we're like a year off from Dan Marino setting the 4,800-yard passing mark, but it wasn't like the proliferation of balls in the air like there
it's
are now.
It's an absolutely absurd number.
Wow. It,
now, that may be one that's never broken.
61 turnovers, yeah. I'd have to see who's come close. Have any teams making a run at that.
It's a stat where when you look at it and you hear it, you automatically go look at it and see what in the world, how in the world did it happen?
Right.
Like, and it was
– Paul Kraus?
Well, no,
I'm kidding.
They were a run-oriented offense that played with a lot of leads, and they were always ahead, and they would pick up two or three interceptions late in games all the time.
Yeah.
I watched it. I mean, that was kind of the era where I really followed the Skins.
That just goes to show you, though, that they lost in the Super Bowl, so it wouldn't have mattered. Or maybe who knows if it would have been different, but that's how close they were to an undefeated season, right? They're 2 points.
Right.
Right, two single points that they lost by, and Green Bay was not very good back then.
Green Bay, Mosley missed a field goal to end the game or they'd have won it.
Is that right?
Dallas, they were up 23-3 at half, and the Cowboys came back and scored, and then the Cowboys were up late in the game and the Skins couldn't win. But they were up in both games they lost, and they're up 20 in the opener.
I used to hate watching, like in the 80s, there was a period, Redskins, Giants in the second half of the 80s. The Redskins played some more high-scoring games, mm-hmm. but it just felt like you went into the game, there were very few teams on their schedule that realistically had a chance to beat them. At least that's the way it felt to me as a kid. The Giants and the Redskins at different points in the 1980s, and the Giants played, I thought, boring football as all get-out back then. But they won, you know, and it would be 17-7.
They won. They won.
And 17-7,
and
there was no chance the other team was going to beat them on that day.
They had LT and Carl.
Right,
Banks
like a
10-point
lead was just insurmountable.
Right, they were fantastic though.
Snoozed me up though,
and especially
it's like watching Big Ten football.
The
back
Giants
then.
were brutally hard back then because if they led 7-0, the game was over.
Pretty much,
that's
how it felt.
Yeah,
anyway, back in the day. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Somebody had mentioned an unbreakable record of the Dolphins' undefeated season. Well, of course, you can't break undefeated. I mean, you could break the record for most wins in a season. The Patriots did win 18, but they had the loss, and they were that close. I mean, truly, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. I mean, I know it's only happened once in the modern, what we consider the modern part of NFL history. But I think a team could make a run at 16.
But teams get close enough to it that it's not absurd at all. I mean,
we saw what Denver got to, like 13-0.
Denver got to 13-0. Mm-hmm. The Colts that I covered in 09 got to 14-0, and famously pulled their starters in the game where they against the Jets and lost. But that team could have gone 16-0 pretty, I would say, easily. But it wouldn't have been absurd
with a little bit of effort. That wouldn't have surprised.
And again,
you
that
the
was
least.
The team that lost to the Saints in the Super Bowl, and that just shows you that's why it's so hard is even these – like in the NBA when a team goes 73-9, you're pretty sure they're going to win it all. Yeah, there's not really much – because over the course of seven games, they're going
to
win.
In a seven-game series, it's going to be tough to overcome.
And that – with that one and out, that's why 19-0 is so hard is because
– got to get that onside
once you get to
the
postseason, it's still darn hard.
To wrap up the turnover – the deal that we were doing there with Washington, 61 forced in 1983. That's the third highest total in NFL history. Seattle, the next year, in 1984, forced 63 turnovers.
Aha!
Wow.
The all-time record, San Diego, with 66 in 1961.
That was a 14-game season, too.
Holy cow.
Now, the Skins' turnover margin that year, I think, was plus 48.
Wow.
I think it was something absurd. I mean, it
that's
was
nuts.
Yeah.
Who did Seattle have back then? Kenny Easley? Who do they have?
Was Easley that... was was their best player, as I recall. Zorn was playing offense. I mean, that was the Zorn Largent era.
Yeah.
That was a really, really good Seattle team.
Was Kurt Warner on that team? I think he was. The running back, Kurt Warner.
Yeah, Kurt Warner.
He was on that Penn State National Championship team,
right? That may
have been
a touch before, but.
No, I think Kurt Warner was on that squad. 84?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, I just don't remember.
What was the year they played Georgia in the Sugar Bowl? Was that for the title for them? Was it 81, something like that? Yeah, I think Georgia won
it. It was 82.
Was it 82? Okay, yeah, so Kurt Warner would have been in the league.
Yeah,
it
could have been. Right. And I still remember the other defensive players in the Seahawks.
Other Kurt Warner. Why are they talking about that bag boy turned quarterback? All right, if you'd like to get in, 641-1010, we'll check in on the text line. Not driven by Duval Ford, built by Lifetime Enclosures. I had a great week with that last week, E.
That's your first time?
I think that was. It's the Fat Tony influence has got me slipping here, man. Tony shows up, I'm like, oh, cakewalk, man. I'm just going to coast for the rest of the day. Not the case. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and Johnny O here with you. Jaguars today. Question of the day out there, presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. Simply ask you, what are, in your opinion, the three records in sports that are least likely to be broken? Doesn't have to be limited to football. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, Jaguars today, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll get to the text line. Built by Lifetime Enclosures, coming up momentarily. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Johnny O, E.T. here with you at World Headquarters over on Hogan Road. Saw a blurb today from Nate Taylor of The Athletic that the Chiefs believe that Tyreek Hill could be suspended by the NFL as soon as next month. It's kind of a vague report, but I guess it gives you a little insight into how they see the situation. You know, the Chiefs with the Tyreek Hill situation going back several months now.
Right.
He and his girlfriend, I'll call her the mother of his child, had their child taken out of their custody.
Right,
because you know, even though the authorities, I believe, have ruled that the kid had a broken arm, they've ruled it an accidental injury. There was some level of concern with like child services to remove the child from the home. That doesn't happen every day, and we all know in the NFL you don't have to be charged or convicted of a crime to be suspended, as we saw with Ezekiel Elliott not too long ago with the Dallas Cowboys getting in some trouble off the field. And so the Chiefs banned him from all team activities this offseason when the news came out, and there was an audio recording that the girl made, and supposedly Tyreek Hill was unaware he was being recorded. There were some what I would deem suspicious text messages because they were written like, you know, I did not do anything to harm our child, don't you? You know, I mean, it was like so blatantly like out of a script, like what would you want someone to discover you had said to clear you?
Let's make sure I say everything necessary.
Like let's have a lawyer write out my text after the fact. At least that's what it seemed like to me. And those got leaked out there. But it's been pretty quiet on the Tyreek Hill news front. Other than that, the NFL has had no comment on it. They said they want the kind of the legal process to run its course.
Well, it sounds like he's talking to somebody in the Chiefs, and they're basically saying,
it's got to be suspended.
We're pretty much preparing for him to be suspended.
Right, and I would think it's probably somewhere in the line of an 8-game suspension.
You would think 4 to 8.
I don't think he's got – I mean, now what is it supposed to be, though, like a minimum of 6 games for domestic –
I think
violence?
It's 6 the first time, and then it's a lifetime ban the second.
Right. Now, he comes in having already had a domestic violence incident with the same woman, with the same child, unborn child at the time when he punched his pregnant girlfriend in the stomach. Honestly, you think about the depravity of doing something like that. You know, is there much worse that you can think of than, I'm sure.
It's unthinkable.
You know, it's just right. Like, in terms of stopping short of really murdering somebody or what, just who could bring themselves to do something like that?
Yeah.
And with that history, I don't know how much the NFL will rely on that history, but basically we're at a point where Roger Goodell can almost make up the rules as he wants, you know?
Especially because he has precedent, and I would think it would be difficult to fight back very hard on it.
I don't think the Chiefs would fight back hard on his behalf. I think the NFLPA would, up to a certain point.
To a certain point.
Because that's their role. I mean, they're, you know, it's like a defense attorney. People are like, how can you defend that guy? Well, everyone's entitled to a vigorous defense under the American legal system.
Everyone's entitled to have the law work for them as best as possible.
Right. It doesn't have to work in their favor ultimately, but everyone has legal protections. He has protections in the collective bargaining agreement, and they would come to his defense to that degree, you would think. But do you think this is going to be an issue? Do either of you think this is going to be an issue with the CBA? That I know a lot of players bristle at the idea that Roger Goodell, for lack of a better term, is judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to a lot of NFL punishments. But on the other hand, how many people does this really impact?
That's the thing.
Right? I mean, if it impacts, it's like the franchise tag. How many guys are getting franchised every year? Half dozen, maybe, something in that sometimes a little bit higher, sometimes a little bit lower. And if it's really only impacting fewer than 10 guys a year.
It's one thing to talk about it in these forums and to have it be a topic on Twitter and have it be a topic among players. Is it really going to matter to them that much when they're sitting at the table trying to hammer out a deal?
What matters more, Tony, do you think, to NFL players? The fact that Roger Goodell has such control over discipline, or the fact that teams have control over them when they hit free agency, potentially with the franchise tag?
Free agency, 100%.
You think? Because I
virtually
think,
across the board.
I think that even though you may not be the one getting franchise tagged, you realize that if that guy can make an uncapped amount of money, it's going to raise the cost of living for the next wave of players who aren't quite as good as that guy coming up behind.
Sure. And my guess is the issue of marijuana no longer being outlawed the way that it is in the league would be a much higher priority than the Goodell thing too. Like, I think that's a higher priority for the players. And it does feel like the league has been extending these kind of odd olive branches kind of sort of in the last couple of months as we get ready for the CBA to really start being negotiated next offseason. But it's this, you know, we're going to have these doctors take a look at what marijuana actually means for players as a pain recovery.
It's such an easy thing in the end for the league to give up.
Yeah.
I can't imagine they
will. Do you imagine them giving it up without getting a concession back in return, though?
Well, and that's when they float the 18-game season.
Something to give.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's such, like, it's much easier for them to say, okay, we'll give up on the or however you phrase it, but we'll have the marijuana.
We'll stop outlawing marijuana for medicinal use.
Right, we'll stop outlawing that. If you went to the owners and said, okay, you can have that happen, or you can give up something that's going to cost you millions of dollars. Well,
sure, give them because I think in part it was a public perception thing.
Right.
You know,
that's lessened.
It's becoming so much more acceptable in society.
I mean, think it was more than in part. I think it was 95% a public perception thing.
Possibly. Possibly. They may have just felt like it was the right thing to do. But opinions on that obviously are evolving.
Right. But they're always going to protect their money more than they are public.
Oh, I think so, too. And I do agree that they are likely willing to give that up. But I, at the same time, I don't think that's
enough. In exchange
enough.
For something. They're not
I don't think that's enough to get an 18-game season,
not even
though.
Close.
No. But, and they're not just going to walk in and say, hey, we'll give it to you. But they'll.
Right.
It'll be something that.
Even though, which kind of drives you a little bit crazy, at least drives me a little bit crazy. If you know it's the right thing to do, if you truly believe, and they're going to argue in the end, if they do give it up, that they believe that there is valid medical reason. Or they're not just going to give it up and say, smoke up, Johnny. Right? That's just. Right. Just, the classic line from which movie?
Breakfast Club.
Yes, of course. Dad gave me a carton of smokes. Smoke up, Johnny.
That may be my favorite Jaguars Today moment in a year.
I love that one. Smoke up, Johnny. We say that all the time at our house because we're always smoking it up. But honestly, you have to make that. You can't make the argument that it's this completely even thing, but we're just going to give it up.
Right.
I don't think they can anyway. And save face, but I think there's a lot of evidence moving in that direction that it does benefit some guys. And
smoke up, Johnny.
Let's be honest. All right, take the franchise tag and take the disciplinary policy and add them together, and it's dwarfed by the amount of people that the marijuana policy impacts, I'm guessing. okay? I don't know. I'm not hanging out smoking with any players, but I'm just guessing that
I would be guessing you're correct.
That maybe the average locker room would have more people impacted by that than the franchise tag and the discipline policy combined in the league. Like, if that number is 20 every year, I could definitely see that being topped in the average locker room.
That would be my guess.
I think it's pretty prevalent. It's prevalent in society.
Right.
Never mind just the National
Football
League.
And that's typically how you do it. You just say, what's the percentages in society? There's no reason to think the percentages in the NFL
It may be higher because I do think, you know, I think a lot of guys, you hear a lot of talk about, well, you know, it's a pain reliever, it's this and that. I do think there's a percentage of guys that just want to smoke and
sure.
just like they're drinking a glass of wine or a cocktail that they're having. But I do think there is probably a higher percentage. If you accept the fact that in every walk of society, for instance, there aren't drug testing rules, right?
Right.
I mean, not every job has them, so there's a little more freedom to mm-hmm. operate in general society. But at the same time, I do think there's a component to where guys, whether it's truly medicinal and they're going the CBD route or whatever they're doing, that it is a kind of like a stress reliever, general
without question.
Pain reliever kind of situation.
I would think that's true.
Yeah, so we'll see. I expect that to be changed in the next CBA.
I do too. And, you know, sitting here thinking about, these are a lot of issues where the players are trying to get X, right? And the only thing we've heard from the league, like, what do the players have to give besides an 18-game season? You know? Like, the contracts aren't guaranteed.
Right.
Like, there's just not
what
a whole
they
lot.
Have to give up now?
Right. Like, there's not a whole lot for them left to give to the owners. Like, it is such a owner-slanted league. It's a league-slanted league.
Well, here's one thing they could give, and I don't know if they would because this is a concession that they've earned in recent years, but some of these voluntary OTAs...
Make them mandatory.
Make
again.
Them mandatory,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, but I don't get the idea that the owners care about getting those.
That may be true.
I mean, and that's really where it comes. If the coaches were sitting at the bargaining table, that'd be priority one.
You know, it's funny,
but that's not how it works.
How many coaches do you hear, all these things are so important, they're so important.
But they don't really want it.
And then they cancel the last one. Right? I mean, like, you've got, we only have 12 days.
And they would cancel more if it didn't look bad.
Right? If it didn't look bad, right? Like, so you've got this opportunity, and these guys are there, and you're going to say, well, you know, it's the psychology of giving them a reward. How hard are OTAs? For goodness sakes, you're on the field for a couple hours. You're not in pads. You're not. This is nowhere near the stress level that they face as the offseason goes along.
It's the most overblown, overplayed thing in the sport.
I mean, there's still an opportunity. Anytime you're running around cutting things like you can get injured.
Sure.
But you're protected as a player if it happens
right.
at an organized team activity.
Yeah. Cancel them all.
Cancel them all, says John. I do think there's a value to installing an offense, learning new things, particularly, you know, the Jags have a new offense coordinator, you have a new quarterback. I think there's value that was gained, don't you, from having those guys on the
field? The mental stuff is absolutely, absolutely great, absolutely important for young players. No question, the meetings, very, very important.
But you don't think taking that from the meeting room to the field, seeing it in three dimensions?
I don't think you have to do it 13 times. I don't think you have to do it in full stuff going on necessarily.
Well, I would think if I'm like player 77 on the 90-man roster,
yes.
I'm like, I want every OTA. I want,
and that's why they all come,
twice as many OTAs.
Sure, absolutely. For the young guys, for the guys who aren't proven, for the guys who haven't been around, absolutely.
All right, we'll come back. We'll take a look at some of the responses to the question of the day presented by Gravely Zero Turn Mowers, an American workhorse since 1916. We ask you, which three sports records do you think are the least likely to ever be broken? We'll share your thoughts and give you some hours when we return in a moment. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Johnny O, and E.T. Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now more Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, a lot of interesting submissions today on our variety of platforms for records that will never be broken in sports, in your opinion. Not everything's a record.
No.
Just because it's a milestone. Like, Ted Williams hit 406. He's the last guy to hit 400.
Not a record.
That's not a record.
Not even really close.
Somebody pointed out Denny McClain's 31-win season in 1968.
Not a record.
Great season. Right. Maybe never seen another 30-game winner, or at least for a long time. Not a record. Not a record by a long stretch of the imagination. With that, somebody texted in, hate to say it, but the Patriots 6 NFL titles and maybe one more. Well,
not even really close to a record.
Right.
Like not even in the same ballpark.
Not
as
even halfway right. to the record. If you're talking NFL titles, the Packers have 13. The Steelers also have 6 Super Bowls.
Right.
So the Steelers could break the record this year. The Patriots could break their own record this year.
And the Cowboys and 49ers both have 5.
Yeah, so that's an imminently breakable record. I mean, Tom Brady's not going to play forever.
Yep. And the Packers and Giants both have 4. It's not that far off.
It's breakable, and I can prove it because it's already been broke.
Yeah.
There you go. Right. It's not a record. It's a Super Bowl. It's tied the mark for most Super Bowls. Many people pointed out Georgia Tech's 222-point margin of victory
Cumberland?
Over Cumberland. Yeah,
that'll never happen.
I remember reading the details on that. Like, Cumberland had refused to play them in some sport or something. Like, they pulled out of an agreement to play them in some sport, and they basically just said, all right, we'll show you.
And these guys.
Yeah, and, like, Cumberland was like a club team. I don't think they sent all their players or something like that. And as this person says, Georgia Tech did not earn a single first down. They scored on first or second down on every possession that they had the ball.
Right. They got some points with the voters.
Yes, they did not. They did not relent whatsoever. 222-0. Yes, I would agree that one will not ever be broken. Celtics NBA record 8 championships in a row and 11 in 13 years will not be touched. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. With both of those, Christy Mathewson's 27 scoreless innings and 3 wins in 1 World Series. Nobody's pitching 3 shutouts in a World Series. Or
no.
Put it this way, nobody's pitching 2 shutouts and then going into extras with that shutout in the third game. So I would agree with that as well. Off the topic, if someone offered a first and a third round pick for Yannick Ngakoue, should the Jaguars take it? I think that's in the that's in the ballpark right there.
Yeah. But I don't think you'd – I doubt you'd get that.
So that's kind of the point. If somebody offered, would it matter where in the round? Like if you were a perennially contending team – is the Patriots' first and third round pick worth doing it for, right?
I don't think you'd take
it. You'd at least want to be middle of the pack, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the way you look at it, you say, look, we'd love to have you on. You know, not one guy doesn't make a team. $20 million plus in salary potentially could be spread out to some other guys.
And if you're projecting that's going to be a top 10 pick,
or even if it's a top 15 pick. I mean, because then it gives you draft capital to move around in conjunction with your other stuff. So I definitely think the Jags would listen to that. I think you're right because no one's going to give a first and a third round pick and then have to turn around and give
and pay him
that kind. Now, I say that, and as I say that, let's look back. What did the Kansas City Chiefs give for Frank Clark in that trade? They gave something, right, to Seattle because he was franchised.
Fifth, though, wasn't it?
Was it a fifth?
No, it was
– I thought it was more so like a second.
They swapped thirds, I think. They got a second-round pick and then another pick.
Okay.
I can't remember. It was like one they got this year and then it was one next year. And it might have been a one and a two. I can't remember, though.
The Chiefs traded D4 to the 49ers for a second-round pick in the 2020 draft. And then they turned around and gave him a 5-year deal for $87.5 million. So – I guess teams are willing to give up the selection and to say, hey, look, imagine if we drafted D Ford and we knew how good he was going to be.
A second round. Yeah.
No, I hear you. Second rounder is different but than a first and a third. But second round's
big.
Not insignificant.
No, it's not. Not at all.
You know, so
A third round pick in 2019, a first round pick this year, and they swapped third round picks and got a second round pick the next year. So they got a 1, swapped 3s and got a 2 the next year.
They got a 1, the Frank Clark deal?
Yeah.
So that's pretty significant right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's more than a 1 and a 3, right? I mean, if you get a 1 and a 2 and a swap of thirds, even if you're going backwards with the swap of thirds, what did Khalil Mack go for? There's another one, right? So I guess, guys, at that position, it goes to show you that on occasion – if you are believed to be an elite ascending player, still ascending player, that a team will give up the draft capital and give up the crazy money contract. I mean, good if you can get it. I don't begrudge these guys making the money whatsoever. When I say crazy money, I mean, hey, they got to pay it to somebody.
Sure.
Salary cap's nearly $200 million for a reason. They're rolling in it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it got to a point where if it plays out through year number four and the Jags are having to go the franchise tag route and then that hook's kind of sitting out there, I wouldn't be surprised if there'd be a team that would be willing to pay that.
I wonder,
Ngakoue,
because off that tone, it depends on what the franchise number is.
It's like 18 and a half.
For next year?
Yeah.
All right,
it's going to be about 18 and a
half. That's like your starting point. I think if you trade for Unique now, obviously you have to be given permission to work out a contract. No team's going to trade a first and a third round pick for a guy just to put themselves in the position of the Jags
right.
are in right now.
And
I don't think you'd be trying
to get that.
Then I say that.
Done early.
The 49ers traded for D Ford and I guess, yeah, kind of simultaneously gave him the mm-hmm. contract. So that's kind of part of the deal.
Right. You would not want to trade for the right to play somebody under the franchise.
Right, to have him play for 1 year at $2 million or maybe not show up or who knows what,
right.
We think he's going to show up. Again, it bears repeating, John, because you've brought this up several times in the last couple of weeks about you need as a veteran player under contract, mm-hmm. if you want the year to count towards your free agency, mm-hmm. you need to show up 30 days before the first game
right.
of the season.
Show up and stay.
And stay,
yeah.
right. You can't just show up, hi, I'm Unique,
right.
nice to meet you.
Right.
Got to go.
And so it's in the CBA.
Right, so if that is the situation he finds himself in, which apparently it is, you can expect Unique Ngakoue is not going to take a chance that his contract will toll over and find himself in, at the very least, he has to force himself to free agency after his fourth year.
Right, because if he doesn't accrue this year, he would wind up as a restricted free agent at the end of the year.
Correct.
And then the Jaguars have a lot of power over his rights. Even
they could offer him all kinds of contracts based on the
right.
what they're willing to tender him.
Correct.
And what kind of compensation they would accept back if somebody else signed him.
Correct. And it was clearly set up in the CBA to not have the situation where a player could hold out until
six games left, something like that.
Right, because that's what used to happen.
Right.
Remember, Eric Rett did that back in the day. Other guys did it.
And it still happens with franchise guys because they're not under contract.
Sure.
Correct.
We were doing the countdown with Le'Veon Bell last year as to whether he would show up
right.
by week 11 or
right.
not.
Right, and that according to himself, after the fact, kind of changed along the way. They didn't know that
right.
he could wait that long. Initially, he thought he was going to have to show up at least at the beginning of the season
right.
if he wanted that year to count, and then he basically forced a situation
right.
where he didn't play at all.
It also could happen theoretically with a fifth-year guy because the whole idea is you're trying to get to four accrued seasons so you qualify for free agency. If a guy's in his sixth year, this doesn't play out because he's already got the four accrued seasons. You can't become an unrestricted free agent if you were drafted until your fourth season.
All right, so in theory, Jalen Ramsey plays this year. Okay, he's got 4 years under his belt. He's got the fifth-year option
right.
that he is under contract for, which is like $13 million, something like
right.
that, for one season. Let's say he decides, I'm not going to show up. Does he have the ability, having accrued 4 years, what kind of situation does he find himself in as to when he needs to show up or if he needs to show up?
He will be fine. The way I read it, he will be fine once he gets his 4 years in. So starting in 2020, you're thinking?
Yeah. Like
he'll be able to hold out.
Next off season, he could hold out.
Right. He'll
if
have
he
his
wanted to.
Seasons by then.
Right. And even if he ends up skipping the year or, I guess, showing up for half the year or whatever the case may be, he could – I think there is a certain point. I don't – can you skip the whole year and force your way? I guess Le'Veon Bell did,
well,
but they would have had to franchise him again.
His mm-hmm. contract, if you don't show up at that point, then your contract tolls. I think – and again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm just trying to figure out. But
I got you.
Under that situation, I believe Jalen's contract would toll – so that he would still be under contract.
Let's worry about Jalen next year.
I agree.
Because we're all going to – there's, as he said, he ain't getting it this offseason. So we'll see how it plays out. Tony, give us a sampling of the records people think will never be broken in sports.
Yeah, DiMaggio's hit streak, probably the most popular there on Twitter today. But
I'm torn on whether that – I know there's a lot of specialization with relievers
sure.
and stuff, but one hit a day. One hit a day. Pete Rose got to 44.
Yep.
You know, DiMaggio, I think, had a 17-game hitting streak begin the day after his 56 was snapped.
Yep.
Which is absurd.
It is ridiculous.
Ken Keltner made two great plays at third base.
As we had
wondering.
A caller mentioned earlier today, Byron Nelson with the 11 consecutive PGA Tour victories. Rafael Nadal's French Open victories currently stands at 12.
It seems like a lot.
I'll turn to John Osier. Will that number ever be touched again?
No.
No. From Ozdog, we got DiMaggio, Ripken's consecutive game streak, Gretzky's career points, and he included a bonus. He says the Bills will hold the record forever. No one's ever going to lose four Super Bowls in a row again in NFL history. And
likely not.
But that's not nearly as unbreakable as some of it.
No, as some of it. Like Cy Young's 5'11". Right. Just, you might as well just stop considering that the record. You know, like there's got to be a cutoff where – you know, you're not going to challenge Christy Mathewson or Walter Johnson or some of these guys' win totals. But
we had a mention here for Brett Favre and his career interception record. We also had Brett Favre mentioned with the consecutive start streak. I think it was 297 in the regular season, right? And if you included his postseason, it was like 322.
I'll take your word for it.
Or something like that. I know Eli would have been around 240.
By now.
Right now, if they hadn't benched him a couple of years ago. I think it's Philip Rivers is at 210, is the longest active streak.
That
so
includes
he would have
a
to,
torn ACL in the playoffs.
Yeah, so he would have to go another.
The way they're protecting quarterbacks, that could get broken.
Yeah, but he'd have to go another 87 games without getting hurt.
But it would take, like, you know, probably a pocket quarterback. It's probably not going to be a running quarterback. Although Favre was a scrambling quarterback at times. It would take that, a guy coming in. High draft pick who gets a starting job right out of the gates. And it could happen, I suppose. Somebody sent me a link. I'll check these out later. 24 strange sports records that will never be broken. This one's for you, John. Brothers Frank and Dennis Furman. You ever hear of them? They hold the record for the longest tennis rally. How many strokes? I'm sure they did this just – it's impressive nonetheless, like without a miss hit.
Probably, I don't know.
How about 50,970 strokes in a tennis rally? So each had nearly 26,000 or over 25,000.
So they weren't
going
for winners.
I'm guessing no, right? Or they're just really
at some point you're like, not, oh, this feels like a record,
right? Like doink, doink, doink. Even if you're just trying to doink it back over the net,
it's yes.
That's pretty damn impressive.
Yes, 50,000 is impressive no matter what.
Not as impressive as Joe Cowart's goatee. Let's welcome him back. With XL Primetime.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit Moe'sCateringFL.com.
Joe Cowart, how you doing, man?
Doing good. How are you, man? How was your vacation?
Mine was great.
We didn't pass each other up in the
north. Were you up in Maine?
Up in the north.
What part of Maine were you in?
We went Boston to start, and then went to Kennebunkport, Portland, Booth Bay.
Okay, we were only in one place.
Yeah.
The same, Portland.
Which was, you were in Portland too?
Yeah, I went to Portland. I went to Freeport, went to Bar Harbor, went to a few different places.
So you took the trip all the way up to Bar Harbor. That's cool.
Oh, yeah. It's out on the East Coast. It's just a 6-hour drive from the west to east coast of Maine.
Liked it a lot.
It was fun. We had a blast, man. I'll say this, on the way back from Bar Harbor, we're going to Manhattan next.
Yeah.
Right in the middle is Boston, and we're going to drive like halfway.
Yeah.
We stayed in Mystic, Connecticut.
And Mystic is where Foxwoods. We were going to go to Mystic, and we ended up just staying up there on the, you know, in Maine.
No, my ass is not going to Boston unless I'm sent there for work. All right? It's not going to happen.
I like Boston.
It's not going to happen.
It's a good town, slightly liberal, okay? I don't know if you know.
Oh, I know.
I don't know if you've heard.
That has nothing to do with my opinion.
Oh, I know that. I know. It's all about the Yankees.
By the way, they'd feel right at home in Portland, Maine then, too. Because not too much conservative about Portland, Maine.
No, but we had a good time. That way. Listen, I was into the craft and the cool air. That's all I cared about.
All right. So what do you have coming up today?
So, we're obviously gonna jump on everything that took place over the weekend. But just real quick, I was listening to you guys as far as records go. And I'm trying to think of one because I was looking at college football. We'll probably bring it up later in the week. Margin of victory, 222 points.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that. Right at the end. Sure.
That is just crazy when you think about it. Of course,
George Tech Cumberland.
That was an outmatched team. Yeah,
They were not. They're like a club. We were talking about it. It was like a club team, and there was a revenge factor because they had canceled some game against Georgia Tech.
Crazy.
And I think it was John Heisman, coach at Georgia Tech team, as a matter of fact.
222 points. Just
got
crazy.
A trophy out of it.
Yeah.
He named after him for that game.
You know, one thing that we will bring up today is Jalen Ramsey, the Tennessee Titans, maybe trolling the Jaguars a little bit, Johnny, with the Titans jersey as a kid. And so we'll have a little fun with, you know, what have you been caught wearing that you'd love to make sure that never, ever, ever is seen again.
All of my school pictures from the 70s. Okay? They are just some adorable bowl haircuts I was rocking.
But what about, as you just mentioned, what about wearing a Red Sox jersey?
You wouldn't have to worry about it.
It's never
touch my skin.
Okay. All right.
No.
Okay.
Not going to happen. All right. No, I will not. Any bet that I could possibly lose, that would not be included in.
We're going to get you overserved and then get a jersey on you.
Never happen. Guarantee it. Guarantee it. You can't. There's not enough alcohol or any other substance in the world that would
we'll create the cocktail.
That would create
my
mental situation that would happen, Joe. Joe's going to – no, never mind. I'm not going to say it. All right, Joe, have a good show today.
All right, man.
Welcome back. Johnny O, good to see you.
Fantastic.
Have a good
week.
What's coming up at Jaguars.com?
More of our 25 seasons, 25 games, which I think people are enjoying. Just going back through, again, the 25 notable games and talking to key players in it. So
love it.
It's been fun.
All right, check out John on Twitter, at John Osier. Fat Tony, off his three-week sabbatical from hiatus from me, is back for at least a little while.
Yeah, for a couple of weeks, and
before
then I'll hit the vacay too. We got the ladies in action, U.S. Women's National Team.
Yes,
at the
moments.
At the World Cup.
Does it actually start straight up at noon, or are they going to give me a little bit of time to get home?
Coverage started at 11:30.
Did it? That means probably a noon.
So I would guess 12:30, but I'm not exactly sure. And then Vandy tonight, College World Series Game 1 against Michigan.
No one cares.
Yeah,
go
baby.
Wolverines.
National champion.
Right. That'll do it for us. For ET, for all the aforementioned, and for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Back again tomorrow with more Jaguars today from 10 to noon right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville, let's go. Two more.